The views expressed throughout this podcast are solely those of myself and the guest and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of ATCC or any other institution. Welcome to Behind the Biology, brought to you by ATCC. I'm your host, Dave Yarmush, and today we dive deep into the legacy, leadership, and lasting impact of one of ATCC's most respected figures, Frank Simeone. With over 42 years of dedicated service, Frank has worn many hats, including Director of Standards and perhaps most notably, the unofficial historian of ATCC. In this episode, Frank will regale us with his remarkable journey from his early days at ATCC to his pivotal role in shaping biological standards recognized by ANSI. Along the way, we'll explore the origins of ATCC, the importance of reproducibility in research, and the fascinating story behind one of the most widely used E. coli strains in clinical labs today. All right, welcome, and thanks for coming on the show, Frank. We really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
So I think this is going to be particularly entertaining for me. In general, I think it's common to know a few things about your company's history, but I don't think it's really that common to know most things about it. And with ATCC celebrating its centennial this year, I'm particularly excited to learn a few things about where we come from. So just setting the stage, before we get into the historical topics, I wanted to spend a little time with you and about you. I don't believe ATCC has an official historian, but would you describe yourself as the closest anyone has to that title?
Yes, I have been called the ATCC historian, especially in my later years. Absolutely. There aren't many people left who live the early history, very few. So this is it.
So did that come about by virtue of your time at ATCC, or were you always particularly interested in that history, or is it a combination?
No, it was due to my time at ATCC. Before I joined ATCC, I had no idea what it was or what type of organization. So the history has come about. And then in working with some of the older folks who link back to people that I never met, I learned a lot of the early history just by working with them. So
it all just came together by chance. Over how long were you with us?
42 and a half years.
Impressive. Hopefully I can long say time. The same thing one day.
Long time.
And you were the director of standards at ATCC, correct?
I had many roles.
Right.
The director of standards was my last title. I had gone part-time in 2010 and fulfilled several roles, but right before I retired in January 2017, year or two before that, I was, you know, responsible for standards and helping develop that program.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about what the director of standards would do at a company like ATCC or presumably any other standards organization?
Well, the director of standards, at least in my role, I can't speak for other organizations, was responsible for overseeing the standards activities. And the standards activities involve both ATCC cultures, which are recognized as standards, both what we call de jure by law and also de facto by common usage. And what I was doing is compiling that, and of course a lot of it had already been done, into knowing which ones were useful as standards. I think it was right before that, 2007, before I had the official role, ATCC was recognized by ANSI. I got to look at my cheat sheet here. ANSI is the American, National Standards Institute. They develop written standards, what are called consensus standards. So ATCC, and we had to apply for it, got recognized as a standards development organization. And I don't know the status today, but there were three standards recognized by ANSI, and I think they're still published, developed by ATCC. So it's kind of overseeing that activity. The one sidelight, which I'm not sure we're going to get into, was we had another organization, the Biological Standards Institute. We established a separate organization just dealing with biological standards. It was based in Washington, D.C., and I worked very close. I did not run it, but I worked very closely with the president of that who did run it. Unfortunately, that only lasted a few years. It was after I retired, they finally closed the shop up. But so that's basically what I did.
And that BSI, I take it, you would make the acronym, Biological Standards Institute, was conceptually similar to ANSI, just very targeted towards the biological sciences?
It was not an organization that would develop standards per se.
Okay.
But it was an organization that focused on the issue of standards in biological, in the biological industry and biological research. And they did some good stuff. Unfortunately, I'm not prepared to get into the details. I don't have them in front of me. But I know they worked on the whole deal. There was a whole issue of irreproducible research. A lot of research was bogus because people hadn't focused on standards. And they had a meeting, a great meeting, and published a great publication on those issues. But they really didn't develop standards like ANSI does.
That's good to know. And that is a topic that is, I would assume to your joy, still coming up at ATCC all the time. We're very regularly talking about the need for producing standard materials, especially in this increasingly advanced and rapid-paced age. Because of exactly those problems, we do see these papers, these journals, these, you know, decades-long research that sometimes are suffering from, you know, this assumed starting point instead of a well-defined starting point that a standard would offer.
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Sipes, the retired president and CEO, he always said ATCC is a standards organization, and I'll give you a little bit of my thought on that. ATCC is an organization that does not have an agenda outside of providing these biological materials. And an example, which I have here, which this was, I don't know the year, but it was back probably in the 1970s, 80s. They were looking for standards for antibiotic susceptibility testing. And they would do roundtable studies to find the organism that would be the most useful in those studies as a standard. And one of those is ATCC, where am I at here? 25922, it's an E. coli. And what it's called the Seattle strain. And what they did is they tested that E. coli. It was not an ATCC culture, but once they identified it as the standard, it was deposited with ATCC so that we would be the source for that material. So you're not getting someone getting it from one lab and someone else getting it from another lab, and now your whole standardization goes to pieces. And that strain is still recognized as part of the test for susceptibility testing. This is what I'm talking about, is when you go into a clinical laboratory and you have an infection and they want to test to see what antibiotics are useful against that organism, these cultures must be used as a standard when they do the test to ensure that their test is correct. We provide those. Those are ATCC cultures.
Because the alternative would be playing a game of biological telephone. You believe that you're using the same material, but things change in transit. Things change in culture and growth, while ATCC's got it part and parcel exactly the same to everybody that works with it.
Our ATCCs, that's the whole point of ATCC. Many of the organisms that we have been preserved and are in the state they were in at least 50 years ago, maybe more. And one thing Dr. Sipes and I pointed out, there are organisms in the ATCC collection that have never seen an antibiotic. And in the era of antibiotic resistance, those become useful for looking for new antibiotics and that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's why ATCC exists, for that purpose.
Thank you. That's fantastic. This seems like a really good time. We've spoken a little bit about where ATCC is now, but what do you know about how ATCC got its start?
Topic near and dear to my heart. I'll do it off the top of my head. I should be able to do that.
Even better.
I'm gonna focus on the first 25 years of ATCC's existence. And there's a character in there. His name is Lore Rogers, L-O-R-E, who was instrumental in ATCC's development. But it really started back in 1899 at the first meeting of the Society of American Bacteriologists, which today is the American Society for Microbiology. And at that meeting, a couple of the folks, the scientists who attended, got together, and they decided there was a need for a central collection of bacteria in the United States. Now, Lore Rogers was not at that meeting. He was born in 1875, so he was only 24 years old, probably just getting started on his scientific career. But two of the characters, C.A. Winslow, was there, and Ludwig Hechtoen, and I'll get to those two in a minute. Winslow first. Winslow said, "I'll develop a collection at the American Museum of Natural History in New York." And in 1911, the collection, he had got it developed. 1913, he published a catalog of what's in there. We have a copy of his catalog. It's pretty rough and old. One key point about his catalog, which impressed me, because I used to run compliance at ATCC, he said in there that because of the nature of some of these organisms, the hazardous nature, anyone requesting them would have to provide evidence that they are qualified to work with them. And I thought that was pretty astute in 1913.
Yeah, for that time period, definitely.
Today we have, I don't know how familiar you are, but we have strict controls on access to these materials and have to. Right. But what happened is at the museum, things changed as they always do anywhere. Priorities changed. Winslow got frustrated and left, and he left the collection behind. And so now Lore Rogers, by this time, this is in 1922, Lore Rogers is president now of the Society of American Bacteriologists. And so he and his colleagues got together and said, we need to salvage this collection. So he traveled to New York, and it is alleged, I can't confirm it in writing, that he carried the entire collection back to Washington, D.C. in a suitcase on a train. It was 175 cultures. They put it at the Army Medical Museum in Washington. He was with USDA, but he provided a scientist, one of his people, to oversee the collection and take care of it. In 1924, the National Academy of Sciences put together a committee that decided or worked on what are we going to do with this collection. And they're the ones, they named it the American Type Culture Collection and moved it to the McCormick Institute in Chicago. And that's the McCormick Institute at that time, 1925, was the director of that was this Ludwig Hechtoen, who was at that original meeting in 1899. We have the actual initial account book. It's in the display case in the lobby at ATCC. If you look in there, the first entry is February 25th, 1925. So I always say, people ask me, what day was ATCC founded? They say, oh, maybe February 25th, 1925.
Seems
and
good
it remained at the McCormick Institute for about 10 years, but the institute started to get into financial trouble, partly because of the Depression and other things. And so the collection, and Lore Rogers is still involved outside of it. He wasn't working there, but he's keeping an eye on it. It was moved to Georgetown University in Washington. That was in 1937. While it was there, Lore Rogers developed a freeze-drying process. I don't think it's still used, but he used skim milk because he was a dairy biologist. And he gave the process to ATCC. You got to understand, up to that time, the cultures had to be maintained by subculturing, which was not good because potential contamination and genetic drift. So freeze drying of the bacteria and some of the fungi allowed them now to preserve them in a stable manner so that they didn't have to subculture them all the time. But what happened is that Georgetown University kind of decided they'd like to keep the collection. And Lord Rogers was a smart man. And again, he was not working for ATCC, but he was overseeing it. I call him the de facto first board chairman. He wasn't official, but he said, no, we're not going to do that. This organization has to go independent. And so he found a row house in Washington, moved in 1947, moved the entire collection in, provided some of his own money. Now remember, he was born in 1875, so this guy's probably in his early 70s by now. He also went in there and helped them hammering nails on the weekend, fixing things. And wow. They struggled, but that's the year that the ATC, that I have documented, that ATCC was incorporated as a 501c3 nonprofit. It's official incorporation, 1947. Now it's an independent organization. He was far thinking, because Georgetown priorities would have changed, or any other place.
Right, same as the National History Museum did.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden, where does it go? So that's when ATCC really was established as an independent organization. Sadly, Lord Rogers, well, he died in 1975. The 50th anniversary of ATCC. He was 100 years old. So he was key in ensuring ATCC became this independent organization. Wouldn't have been for him, I guess ATCC might not be here. I don't know.
Yeah, that's very impressive. A part of me wants to comment on his name. It's so appropriate for the kind of legacy, right? A name like Lore.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a strange name. And I mean, you've seen Lore and L-O-R-E. I've never seen that name, but that's how it's, we have some of his publications, so we know that's how it's spelled.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And then so ATCC now is headquartered in Manassas, Virginia.
Right.
We've got a number of, I don't know if we'd call them satellite sites, but additional locations. I work at the one in Gaithersburg, right, which I believe was formerly in Rockville, Maryland.
Well, the ATCC, I'll do it briefly, it actually moved to another row house in Washington in 1954. But in 1964, it built the building in Rockville. Now they had a nice building, partially funded by NIH and NSF. So they had government help in building that. And it remained in Rockville in that facility. We actually bought a couple more buildings on that property and expanded until relocated to Manassas. So the relocation to Manassas was first. And then it was interesting. I was head of operations when Dr. Sipes came, so I worked closely with him. Virginia gave us a deal. Maryland was not happy. And so later, when they established the facility in Gaithersburg, he said, well, we're giving something back now to Maryland. So yes, now it has dual facilities, one in each state, which is kind of nice.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'd like to interrogate that more, but I'm afraid we don't have the time for that right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure we could talk all day, believe me. But for now, that is an interesting beginning. I know what we're going to talk about on the next episode, but in between there, ATCC today still maintains itself as a standards organization. And it's in an interesting state, right? Because it's not quite like NIST that I would say characterizes or defines almost the concept of a standard for different fields. So how would you describe ATCC's?
I would say ATCC, I'm giving you my opinion, somebody could challenge me, is the lead standards organization for biologicals. When I say, I got to be careful saying biological, I should say biological materials. Cultures, DNA, derived materials, not human beings or animals. We don't deal with those kinds of biological materials. But for biologicals, NIST is broader. ANSI is broader. All the other standards organizations are broader. There's one called they changed their name, but it was the National Clinical Laboratory Standards Institute. They dealt specifically with standards for clinical laboratories. So that included microorganisms and other materials. But I would say ATCC is the leading standard organization for biological materials. That's, you know, I could be challenged.
Well, I won't be the one to challenge you.
You won't challenge me.
Not, absolutely not. I would lose my job. But just before we go, because I can't help myself, what's your take on that sort of, I don't want to say strictly defined necessarily, but that gradation between ATCC serves biological materials, NIST is generalized, ANSI is generalized, the former NCLSI was heavily clinical or specifically clinical. Like, what's the value add from getting so specific?
The value add for?
For being specific to, just the biological materials as opposed to.
Well, that's what ATCC's business is. ATCC could get outside of that if they wanted to. I'm not sure it would be worthwhile, but most of ATCC standards, including the three written standards, which I wrote down, one was on assays on anthrax toxin, human cell line standardization. I don't know if you're a biologist, you're familiar with short tandem repeat, STR.
And increasingly
identification of animal cells. These standards that were written standards through ANSI that ATCC developed, again, are focused on biological materials. So the idea is that that's what ATCC is. We don't do physics. We don't do chemistry, analytics from a technical side. We're biologicals and specifically laboratory biological cells and organisms and those kind of, so that's why the focus on biological standards.
And I would assume that comes with a greater degree of expertise, the fine details that can get lost when you generalize.
Absolutely. In fact, ATCC worked, some of these written standards are developed in partnership with NIST.
Mm-hmm.
So we worked closely with the folks at NIST to develop the standards because we had the expertise. They had people working on these. They were working on identifying mouse cell lines using the STR process, but we were the experts on that, that process. So they pull us in and for biological standards. Other standards, no, ATCC would not be called in to help because we're not experts in those areas.
Makes sense to me. Well,
I use the term we loosely, not me.
Several of us are experts, I'm sure.
Yeah. We have them.
Right. That's right. With that, I think we're going to round this out today. Looking forward to the next time where we talk about some of the major pivotal events in ATCC's history. But for now, I really appreciate your time, Frank, and I look forward to this again.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. That wraps up our conversation with Frank Simeone, a true pillar of ATCC and a passionate advocate for scientific standards and reproducibility. From tracing the roots of ATCC back to 1899 to sharing the behind-the-scenes efforts that led to ANSI recognition, Frank's insights remind us of the critical role that history, consistency, and collaboration play in advancing science.